Session number 27045, Reel 4.
Mr. Jacobs, Reel 4. So, what else were you doing at Later Sex? You were doing this rather complicated thing, but basically just turning dials on a machine you didn't understand.
Well, I've got to say, mostly it weighed on and it was drill. Because part of that you do a week, colour guard.
Tell me about that then.
Well, like you're colour guard for a week, so you've been doing field training, and then they give you French polish rifles, white gaiters, white buckle and belt, and special collars, and you fit on parade, and before you get on parade, a little officer comes around with a brush, brushing you down. And before you go on parade, you're supposed to look yourself in the mirror. You've got absolutely, you know, spot on. And then you do a bit of drill. Then you march up to the flag base. And then you do the present and everything else. And then you march back. This particular day, and you've got to really watch yourself, you know. And he come up to me, he says, your buckles ain't in line at the back. He says, you bloody fooled. So he got hold of my belt and he bloody squeezed the bloody belt, tightened it. Well, round your belt, I couldn't breathe. I don't know how I lasted out. It's right round me diaphragm there and I couldn't bloody well breathe, it's so bloody tight. He said, report them to me afterwards. Do you know what he did, Mummy? 7 days, 11s. 7 days, 11, punishment, that is.
Tell me about that, punishment drill. What was it?
Oh, that's about doubling.
Is that
11A?
11A punishment.
Yeah, number 11s, yeah. Doubling rifle, innit? And doing a bit in the morning as well. But
How tough was it?
Well, it wasn't all that tough there because they had no facilities, really. Because we weren't, we've been in the base itself, yes. But we stationed out, we had to march back with them, so it's just stoppage and leave mostly at the school. They couldn't see it to be do doubling with a rifle in that playground there. Wasn't enough of you. But you had your leave stopped anyway. And whatever privilege you might have had.
Did you do much gun drill in the sense of working on the 6-inch gun or whatever, you know, actually
learning? Only the dummy run. And we learned about tactics, up, let her shoot, down, let her shoot, right and left hand, whatever, as to, you know, spotting. But, we did one bit of spotting once, and we was North Africa on the way out.
Yeah, that's on the boat, though. This is back at Exland.
Yeah.
So you did a bit of gun drill on the 6-inch, but it was dummies?
Yeah, just loading drill.
How did you take to that?
It was hard work, I'll tell you what. And you get a misfire, you get a misfire drill. Freeze! What puzzled me was you've only got, it's the heaviest body ammunition you can shift by hand. That prodigy weighs a ton. Oh, another thing. A prodigy. Do something. He said, right, drop your rifles there and back. Last one goes again. Or you make a run with a bloody shell in your hand. Run around you, you know. Weighs underweight. You're bloody done off heavy. And when you're shoving him through a bloody a dummy breech, and all it does is fall into a load of sand and so on, you've got to come around and pick it up again. And all the clerks and cases and the stuff and sponging out, it's done just like Nelson's done. And it's just if you're fine, you know, mechanically. And the Belfast guns weren't like that at all. That was breech loading, it was done by hand, everything. Clerks and cases, I think, they were special bullet clerks and cases because it was not fixed ammunition, it was separate ammunition. You got the shell, you got the cordite. The cordite comes out in bags. But first of all, you sponge out. Oh, just fired. Dry out. Shove the prodgy up. Shove that up, you know.
Prodgy's another word for shell. Yeah.
Projectile. Shove it up there and push it up tight so it fits the driving screws. Put the two bags in. And then he puts the, what do they call it, a fuse. And then he bloody fires it. It's a pull string. Whatever. And they tell you that the Tombaugh ship, a lot of people don't know this, but they don't actually fire the guns. They close a cross-level indicator and they've read these. When the ship comes to an horizontal position, that's when it fires. So when you get the big guns, they're always bloody, they do the measurements when you're level from a level bit. They do that. So they make the guns, and you know, it's when they come down, boom, they all go together. And that's done with a sort of bubble.
Anything else about your time? I'm not quite sure how long you were there.
Not long.
Where did you go next, then, after that?
Well, we talked about, it was to Colindale, it was a staging post.
That's HMS Colindale?
At Fareham.
Fareham,
yeah.
Just outside Southampton.
Yeah.
But what were you doing there?
We were just hanging about, waiting for a draft. And I suppose I was a crafty sod, really. And being I've got a name for liking me food, it was in these huts. Listen, huts with a stove in, you know. And first time I fell in, they said, right, this left turn, cookhouse duty. I thought, so, well, I like this. So next day, instead of falling in, I didn't fall in. I just went to the bloody where I did the cookhouse. The rent says, well, you know, make yourself useful. So I never did fall in anymore. I just went down to the cookhouse and stayed there.
What were you doing? What were the cookhouse fatigues?
I was just bashing for the girls and general cleaning up. And it was a good job, I liked it. And a bit of fun. And, but the they had about four huts there, you know, about 30 old people there. I always remember that. And they got to know there was only one. There was only one duty going to be full out. And they used to get, so the blokes would say, well, only one that needs to get in the rig of the day, because we know what rotor he's using. So all the others, you just better get up, just slip your boots on, put your greatcoats on. It's dark, nobody can see you. And, but they all did that, and one day they got it wrong. We're all standing in our boots and bloody underwear, in the overcoat, and he said, this mate, left hand, quick march. When he got us to the bloody thing, we got no green clothes on. What the bloody hell, he said. We dodged that one, didn't we? They scotched that, all right. It was a funny place, really, because we had two blokes in there. They were two blokes in our hut, and they were brothers. And they were intellectuals. They used to write operas, so they said. And the old master at arms, he was a retired old master at arms, and they were always, you know, covering for each other, and he couldn't tell one from the other. He couldn't, he was driving him right. Because they used to do each other's punishment. He just couldn't tell one from the other.
Were they actually twins? Or was
they were identical twins, yeah. I couldn't tell them from other. But they were queer buggers, and they used to antagonise him. And I remember once I went to the regulating office, and he didn't know it. He was in there, but anything. But someone had tied his bike onto the weight, and every time somebody opened the door, his bike went up in the air. Bashed out of his bike. I did that once up there, get caught for a sentry duty all night. Yeah, in Collingwood. Perimeter sentry it was, and I thought, so they had people to do it. They call them a ship's company to do that, really, and they just have the blokes in there just to fill the gap, make two of them, for something to do, you know? And I'm on from bloody midnight to bloody 4 o'clock. And it's in the winter. Well, it's cold anyway.
Now, before we go, that means you were there for quite a while, because you went there in the summer.
I was. They missed me.
Okay, sorry, carry on with the story, then, yeah.
Anyway, I get pulled into this bloke. He says, where you got? He said, well, he said, you're with me. He says, all right. So he marched off in the office of Posture. So, with this bloke. So he says, well, he'd be sat there, you know. The officer went off. He says, I said, what we do now? He says, well, I know what I'm doing. So I said, what's that? He said, get me head down. And he opened his feet, he's got an alarm clock. So I thought, that's it. I ain't going to do nothing if he ain't. So we fished up in this barn, keeping our heads down, and about 3:30, the alarm clock off went up. He got up, and then we got relieved and went home. What crafty sod. I don't know what happened if we got caught. I weren't bothered, I wouldn't have stayed on my own. They talked me into it. Anyway, I'd come unstuck there because I had my mate Ernie Dimon, the bloke I was talking about. He was getting married. I can't remember a date anyway. I seemed to be there for a long while. How long, I don't know. It was months, wasn't years. And I went down to regulate. I would see if I was, you know, due for something. And he said, what's your name? I said, Jacobs. He says, where you been? I said, been here all the time. Well, you see, Mr. Lady, he says, you're out of here. That was it. I let give myself away. So I never did go to Ernie's wedding. And dates I'm bad on, but it was halfway through. And the sad part about it is, maybe if I'd gone any earlier, I might have been some of the blokes who got their best for those sosas. My mate Stradley's got that. He found him just like a while ago with his win. And he's got cancer and he wouldn't talk to me.
What's
this
asbestos?
Asbestosis. Well, they were doing that refit and they were refitting it for Far East. So they were ripping the stuff out and were chucking it around. Nobody knew anything about it. And anybody, he was on there. He was on during D-Day. And before they went into refit, he went sick and went into sick bay. And so they pushed the crew on, and they didn't push him on. So he came back to the boat and he stayed there all during the refit, which is about bloody 9 months, something like that. And he caught the full whack. I mean, by the time he'd done best part of it, I suppose. But he's got a small pension, but he's dying now. He wouldn't speak to me last time. Well, Wynne said he's poorly. She did call you back, but he never did.
Now, how did you actually get your posting to HMS Belfast? Because that was your first posting.
Yeah. Through the regulator, I was down the beam, but giving myself in.
That was when it happened?
Yeah, that's when it happened.
Now, tell me about the post. What was the drafting procedure? Was there a sort of, I mean, the Royal Navy has a drafting procedure. I don't know whether you remember it. But
yeah, get your act and get your travelling warrant and you're off on your own.
Now, we've just been talking off tape, but you reckon you joined HMS Belfast on the time?
Yeah.
Sort of about January 1945.
Yeah.
While they were
in Middle Dock, yes.
Now, tell me about what happened when you first joined her, you know, when you first went up, because she'd be in big...
She was in dry dock, she was. It was a mess. Really, everything stripped out. Couldn't use the toilets on board. They had these ancient toilets, which were really on a slope, all together. And you could imagine blokes on there. I mean, if you wanted a pee in the night, you had to go on the deck, you know, outside on the bloody jetty. So everybody had a tickler tin to pee in. Right? But golden rule is, you empty it before the dockyard mateys come on board. And anyway.
Now, tell Tell me what happened when you first went aboard. What was your, what happened when you got there?
Well, they just introduce you, but he'd see the regulator, and he gives you a mess. I was in the upper deck mess deck, where the hangar used to be.
Now, can you describe your mess deck?
Well, the upper deck mess deck was where the hangar used to be, the other side of the ADR. So it leaves off the forecastle.
What was it like? Can you actually describe it for us?
It was a square room. Just back, they're behind the heads. Square room about... what would it be? 14, 15... 15 foot by about... 4, 5, 6... about 6 vessel benches. About 6 mess decks. This mess table was in there. And altogether about 60 people in there, I suppose. And there wasn't hammock spaces for 60. But like anything on board ship, I mean, you park your hammock where you can, in the gangways, whatever. And you can imagine that some of the gangways are being worked in. But at its moments...
Now, what about the hammocks? That's the first time you mentioned them. I mean, how did you take to the hammocks?
Well, until you get yourself some stretchers, proper stretchers, and bloody you don't know how to bloody operate them. Not very well, but you soon learn.
Well, tell us about it. How did it work, the stretchers?
Well, you get these couple of lengths of stick about 18 inches wide, cut a V in them, and you... what is it? You put them through. You pick up the first and last thing and sort of thread it through the bits so it's bloody plaited in there, calls it rigid, so they don't close together. You know the hammocks when you've got that, they close, you sold them apart. So you had two of them, and you've got a nice flat bit. It's hardwood, and that's it.
What was it like sleeping in a hammock? I mean, how did you take to it?
Well, I suppose I got used to it in the end. It's a case of having to, wasn't it? All right, it's never bothered me.
What about stowing the hammocks?
That's... you've got to lash them up and stow, ain't you? And,
what do you mean?
Well, you have to lash up your hammock. You've got your... hammock, you bloody squeeze it, bloody, I make a sausage of it, undo the bloody thing, twist them round the inside, make a sausage. Because I don't know why a good hammock is supposed to float. It's got kapok in it, and it's so tight, if it falls overboard, it will float, keep you afloat, and it's also used for damage control.
Now, what about...
And that's why they're always very clean on the mess deck. You don't leave anything lying around on a mess deck. If it does, it goes in a scram bag.
Now, tell me about the scram bag, then.
Well, anything you leave on the mess deck, you've got mess deck cleaners, you leave any kit, anything, lying around on the tank because of the pumps... And, if it was it's flooded, the pumps wouldn't work, get blocked up. They come round and put it in what they call a scram bag. And that scram bag is only opened once a week to resuscitate any for clothing or stuff you've got. You've got to give them a bar of Passazard.
Soap,
yeah. And that cleans the mess. But, I mean, you just don't do that because it's bloody gets ruined your kit anyway.
So you've got a scram bag. Now, what about lockers? Did you have lockers?
Yes.
Where were they?
Locker flat. In some instances, they were in the mess, but not very often. They used to have a locker flat miles away from your room, and it was nothing but lockers.
What would you keep in there?
Well, all your kit that you ain't wearing. All the kit you ain't wearing, just anything you got, any personal belongings, your overcoat, stuff like that. You couldn't have anything outside.
So you wouldn't have any of that in your room, in your mess deck?
Oh, no. I mean, if you've had your trousers on, you take your trousers off when you go to sleep, you just hang them on your bloody hammock, round a minute, cleats, whatever. And you sleep with your shirt and pants. Jarmers I never heard of. It was Hardgraft. Yeah, it was.
Now, how many were aboard when you went there? I mean, cause...
Well, full complement. It was about 1,200, I think. But when you think about all those guns had to be manned, it must have been all of that.
But in refit?
No. When we sailed...
No, I'm talking about when you...
Well, there was hardly anybody there. Just a skeleton crew, that's all.
So who would the skeleton crew be? I mean, what sort of ratings?
Oh, seamen, mostly. Able seamen. They didn't have the mechs on board. They might have had a few, you know, petty officers. They didn't have no wireless on board. They were busy training. They knew what they were doing. They could have that training on it, but mostly a seaman, I would have thought. Stokers couldn't do anything. Because they couldn't do anything unless they fire up the engines.
So what were you doing aboard them? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, why did they pick you out to get on?
Well, first of all, you start blood chipping paintwork, for starters.
Tell us about that. What was the... That was when you first...
Hammer.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, all ships need painting, don't they? So they finish a bit, they bloody start painting it. But the over the side, it's only, you know, small painting bits. Over the side, in the dry dock, the dock armadies do that.
So where were you chipping paintwork then?
Well, I was a quarter deckman, so it's down to quarter deck.
And what was it like? I mean, how thick was the paint you were chipping off?
Well, it wasn't chipping off, just get a straight lever. The worst start day about chipping off, I'd say chipping, it was just an odd bit of painting on a locker or something like that, but not on the main ship itself. That didn't happen.
Were you painting or were you chipping off? I'm not quite sure what you're doing.
Well, we're doing part of ship duties, might have just been cleaning, you know, on the floors, trying to make clean up the place. I mean, you might have been captain of the heads. You're doing the bogs. No, you weren't doing the bogs because you weren't allowed to use them. So,
So what were you on board? Why were you a radar operator on board the ship?
Well, I was seaman as well, wasn't I? I was able seaman. And that's what people do. I mean, you only do radar as part when you're bloody, you know, out in the... When you need it, when you're watch keeping one thing and another. But when you get out to sea, when you become a seaman. I mean, you got a rate, an unsubstantiated rate. In other words, you get RC2, and they're not substantive rates, they're just a gunnery rate, radar rate. AA1, AA2, 8A3, that's air gunner 3. But you can have three of them be an AB. It's not very often, usually one's a killick.
So, you were standing by the ship for about 5 months. Give us an idea what you were doing. Well, standing by, you were on the ship for 5 months in dry dock.
Well, we're working inside the bloody radar stations and bloody one thing and another. And
see, that's what I was asking you about. What were you doing in the radar?
Familiarisation with the mechanics that were in there. And
well, tell me about it. What was she equipped with?
I told you all the radar. She was full of radar.
Not on tape, yeah.
You what?
Not on tape, yeah. What radar did she have?
She had the... 281, that's a warning air, 293 warning combined, 277 warning combined, 285, she had these Yagi aerials attached to the three director towers, which controlled the 4-inch AA. She had 283 that controlled the main armament, for coupled with an ABU, auto barrage unit. And it had an auto barrage unit working off the A scan of the 283. No, hang on. 282 it was. 283 was the Oricans. No, the pom poms. Multiple pom poms. 282. No, it was 283, wasn't it? Main armament. 283 main armament. You had an A-scan, right? You had a rate clock. You set the rate clock, the closing rate of the aircraft coming in. It might be a low-flying torpedo aircraft coming in. And you're picking up the radar, and the radar's travelling at the rate you come along on the bloody bomb scan, right? And then you can have the you can increase the speed if the you have a little well inside the vent coming up there. So if you're up there, and you've got the well coming in there, you put 300 knots, right? And this is moving away from it. You know the aircraft ain't doing 300 knots. They're supposed to be moving the same thing. So you can adjust the closing rate of the U well to the signal coming in. Till in the end, you've got them forming the coast together and they don't move. So you know you've got the rate of the aircraft right on. They feed the time of flight into the aircraft and with a 0.1400 fuse, right? Then you fire 360, and it's fired by the ABU, when all that's taken into consideration, and things being right, as soon as the aircraft come in at 41,000, that's where the bloody things explode, right in front of them, 360 inch prodges. Obviously, we never used it, but that's the idea that it would do.
And which bit were you actually on? I mean, what was your...
Well, I was attached to the 293. I was an operator. 293, that was my...
And that's controlling the main...
warning. It's controlling warning combined. It was used when it was used to go. In fact, captains got so used to radar that no captain would go to sea without a radar going, and it had to be one of the other two, 277 or 293. That's why the two were warning combined. They could both do bloody navigational radar as well.
The guns that you were controlling, you know, you just described it.
Yeah.
Which guns are they? Are they the
6-inch?
They're the main armament.
Main armament, yeah.
And they could be used as...
Yeah, yeah, 283, but ABU unit.
And so they were combined to look for ships and
anti-aircraft. For low flying aircraft, you could put a salvo at a range of, so they had to fly through it.